Good morning. It's the Expressive Arts Collective of Long Beach coming to you from the City Heart headquarters here in Long Beach. I am Sugathi Rupin, licensed marriage and family therapist and expressive arts therapist. And I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Christian Starnes, licensed marriage and family therapist. And I work a lot with Traumarama, LGBTQ, and we do some somatic experiencing, EMDR, and imagination work.
And we are here with our fabulous guest, Ben Cady. Ben, say hi.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, nice. So happy that you're here. So Ben is a film director, he is a music video director, and does visual effect.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Do you want to say anything to like introduce yourself more than that?
Yeah. I work in the film industry and I do freelance. So it's been a lot of, you know, short-term projects, a lot of variety. But the main things have been music video directing and making short films and working as a visual effects person.
Yeah. Ooh. And Ben is a local to Long Beach, and Ben and I met in an acting class here in Long Beach a while ago. What, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
2 years, something like that. Yeah.
It's been a while. Which led to Ben and I working together and creating a short film together.
Yeah.
That was last year. So that's how I know Ben.
I love it. Yeah, this is my first time meeting Ben. And I'm really excited to find out about, like, yeah. How did you get started in everything? Like, was it like when you were a little kid, you were into films? Like, I always, like, my escape was my imagination in movies and things. And then we all go on like different courses with that or paths, or we don't, you know, like some people, like, it's like, oh, I play with my kids. That's where that my imagination comes out more. So
totally.
What was that like?
Yeah, I was definitely, well, I was definitely a theater kid, I think, like you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing plays, and at some point around like middle school and high school, that sort of switched to making short films with my friends and recruiting everyone from, you know, after school drama to be in these films that we make over the summer. So that's really how it started. I was like just loving that as a hobby, and then ended up sort of making the life choice to go to film school for undergrad, and that was sort of the the turning point of, okay, this is gonna try to be the career now. So now I'm like 5 years out of college, and it's been interesting sort of following that path into something professional and seeing how it's, you know, changed and all that. Yeah.
How was the pandemic? Did you kind of go back to, you know, a lot of people making things with their friends long distance?
Yeah.
In that way.
Oh, totally. That was a big part of it for me. I mean, obviously very disruptive, like, I think,
right,
for all of us.
You know, it's like, oh, hi, a major profession that needs people. And
and you need to be together to do it.
You need to be together. It's much easier. And everybody's doing different things. So it's not like, you know, we just need the two of us to make something happen. It's like, oh, maybe we need to be outside. Or
totally.
I don't know how to create a set. Like, you know? Kind of go back. It came into my mind just thinking about being a kid. It's kind of like going back to those basics of how do I create things on a smaller scale that's going to be really collaborative. That's my assumption.
That's totally dead on. I think during the pandemic, I guess, as you know, as a silver lining, a lot of people were trying to see if they could do animation instead of physical production. So I ended up sort of like pitching on and directing animated music videos for the first time. There was a few months where everyone was like, oh, who? Suddenly animators were super in demand.
Oh, that makes sense.
And one of my shows that I like, Pin 15, went animated during the pandemic.
Oh, that's
anyway,
so cool.
So it's interesting that you say that. Yeah, I noticed that.
So
I didn't think about that or like know that. Oh.
It was an interesting time. Like, people were...
I don't want to invoke a pandemic or anything hugely worldly life-changing, but it's those moments that things get shaken up that you start to find your own worth, maybe, and then seeking out, like, oh, it's like, it can be a double-edged sword, but, you know, thinking kind of mental health-wise, too, it's like, oh, crap, I can't do the thing that I always do.
Yeah.
Then we got to think outside the box, get a little creative, and reach out to people And so it sounds like that through line of being creative, being able to make something, express something, you still were able to do that. It sounds like something really important to you, who you are. And then it was just the methods, modalities, the way about it had to shift because of circumstances.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That was the positive, I guess, silver lining of it was everyone sort of being forced to, find different ways to be creative, find different ways to just keep things going, right? And there's some exciting discovery in that, even though the circumstance is so bad, but there's that, it can lead to some surprising adjustments, you know?
The animators were like, our time to extra shine!
I know. Yeah, definitely.
So this is an excellent topic for me to interject one of my formal interview questions. Could you describe a project where you had to think outside the box to overcome a creative challenge? What did you learn from that experience?
That's a great question. Well, I have a fun example that is very related to what we were just saying about animation. Because during the pandemic, I ended up making an animated 10-minute film.
Wow.
And very much not like, was not an animator going into it. So this was sort of my harebrained idea of like, oh yeah, like, we want to make something remote. Production was still very much shut down. And so my good friend and I wrote this animated film that's kind of loosely based on a childhood experience of his about a little boy who, the same week his parents are separating, he discovers a beached whale on the beach that they live at. And it's to other people, this dead whale is like a kind of sad, disgusting nuisance. But to this 10-year-old kid, this is like the most beautiful thing he's ever seen.
Yeah.
And he ends up wanting to be friends with the whale and wanting to sort of hold on to it as a distraction from the divorce. So it was a very special story. And but the production of it was all just, kind of faking it till I made it in terms of doing the animated project and learning on the fly and all that and a lot of...
And it's a beautiful film.
Thanks,
dude. I love the story of that already. I was like, I'm starting to tear up. There's so many layers.
Oh, no. It's really beautiful. The first time you showed it to me, it was before you were like, before the final, final edit, final cut. And it was so beautiful. And I had an emotional reaction to it because it's this mix of like, oh, the kid, all these big feelings, and then oh, the whale, and all the big feelings. And you're right, Chris, like there's so many like layers to it.
Yeah.
It's a very juicy and very sweet film.
Ooh.
Shout out, it is being featured somewhere.
Yeah, it just premiered online on Short of the Week earlier this month.
Yay!
So that was...
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, that was really fun news to kind of wrap up our journey with the project. Have a online home for it.
But,
yeah, if you want to check it out, it's called Stranding. It's on Short of the Week.
I want to.
Yeah,
I want to see.
It's really cute. It's very sweet. It's moving. Cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was showing it to you at that sort of middle stage, it's like, is this working or not? It was so helpful to get your fresh eyes on it, too.
Mm-hmm. You showed me like a couple different ways you were thinking about going about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked your original vision of it, which I think was a little more slowed down, definitely a little more emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I have visions of the child by the whale on the beach, the sounds of the ocean, and all sorts of things, like, of just how layered that is. Yeah, how did you, so you were like, okay, I want to create this story. Did you come up with the story? And then you're like, well, I'm at my house. I guess maybe I'm going to do an animation story.
Yeah, it was sort of like reverse engineering. As I mentioned, my good friend, his name's Reef Olberg. We've worked together on a couple projects. So we wanted to do an animated film, but we're sort of searching for the story idea. But Reef grew up part of his childhood in rural Mexico, in like Baja California. And this event actually happened in the town where a whale beached. And it was, very sad and sort of an issue that the whole town had to figure out how to deal with.
Yeah.
So Reef had always wanted to make that into some kind of a film. And, trying to do that in live action is like, oh, what do we build, like a huge fake whale? So the animation kind of married to that was the starting point. I think it's nice in animation to do a concept that you couldn't possibly do in live action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does this have to be in animation? So that was the jumping off point, and then we fleshed it out into a film from there.
Cool. Yeah, we kind of like also go, okay, because it's hard. You know, like we talked about last week with art journaling, to get over the sense of perfectionism and wanting to try something new. And that's such a stressful time that when there's like two ways to go, either kind of left, I'm arbitrarily picking directions, mind you, left over to, you know, wait, I gotta wait it out. I can't do it the other way. I gotta, oh man, everything's gonna be over and blah, blah, blah. And then there's the other way where it's like, no, I'm gonna learn something completely new then, you know, everything is gone. So we're gonna da da da. And you kind of found a middle in the gray of, okay, well, I can't do that thing. If I kind of look over here, perspective, oh, I could do this thing. And still, I guess it's sometimes it's finding out what is the goal.
Maybe, yeah.
The most important thing.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, how do you approach that question of sort of, and you too, Sue, like perfectionism versus being open to that kind of risk?
Yeah.
Even if it might not be as efficient. Like, how do you guys approach that for yourselves?
Well, I mean, when you're working with perfectionism, helping people build the courage and confidence to take what we call healthy risks.
Mm.
Because it can feel really scary. And to someone who's been really like rigid in the perfectionism, any kind of choice outside the box, it feels like almost like a crisis, like 0 to 60 stress.
Sure.
So it's all about like helping people build that courage to take healthy baby risks, little teeny risks, but that change the trajectory and can really open them up to the possibility of what life could be like outside the box. It's very juicy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds juicy. Healthy risks.
Healthy risks.
Same thing of those kind of moments and setting the intention, getting mindful. I do a lot with also like parts work, sense of self, like who in me is getting activated, what's familiar, how old does this feel, getting to know that part in order to, because it's technically all you, right? But if we can kind of feel some objectivity or distance to kind of look at it, it can kind of figure out eventually like, oh, this is kind of where this came from, maybe where I learned this, and it loses its power in that way. And then kind of what I do personally and also teach is kind of like, how do I negotiate? You can sit with me. I'm not gonna let you drive, little person or whatnot. That's like, not gonna work, not gonna try. But we can come with me. I'm gonna let my kind of adult self or whatever be in charge, and let's try those small little risks. So I'm thinking like if it's something creative, first pausing, noticing, acknowledging I'm scared, I'm uncomfortable, which I am, turns into also kind of like clothing. It's like I've become it. So it's like, okay, a part of me is, okay, let's go and just kind of start this together and see where it goes. And perspective shifts.
Yes. Like, I was thinking of like the way that we talk to ourselves when we are about to take risks and talking back to the fear, right? We love to personify fear in here, right? Yeah. So like talking back to it, like it's called bossing back in CBT. you know, like talking back to it, that like it's okay to be a beginner. It's okay to try something. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't mean it's a failure. You just learned something. You know, it's like, I think about it like inventors or scientists who do like a bajillion tests. And, you know, is it failing or is it just like getting closer to an answer, you know, finding clarity? So changing that mindset to that can be really helpful. And talking back to that fear of like, we're just fucking around here and we'll see what happens.
Being a detective and so all those things. And I think also kind of whether it's real or imagined, I'll often, and you gotta find a balance, because if we go too far, it can become like a codependent thing, but it's very kind of, if you know what to look for, it's easy to tell if it's gone there, but having someone in mind that is supportive or would, like, what would they say? What would a wise figure say? Like, I still have Jonathan, my first therapist, that pops into my mind because I felt so like, okay, I feel like if I can get to Jonathan once a week at that time, it's gonna be okay. It's like a home base when you're feeling so all over the place.
Yeah.
And so it can be someone from your life. It can be character that you feel connected to, mm-hmm. or like, you know, like sometimes I'll think about Barack Obama. I do not know him, but he's so like, hey,
you're a imaginary version of Barack Obama. Yeah,
chill. I see him coming to my problems with like a button down, still dressed for the occasion because he respects himself. But you know, it's open a little at the top, not a tie, right? And holding pizzas, going, hey, what's going on? And it's like, if you're calm, I'm good. And kind of borrow, it just activates my own internal, what I know to be true, which is it doesn't matter if I play the guitar wrong by myself.
Yeah.
Nothing bad's gonna happen, but it's that internal fear that the shame's gonna get me. So I bring in somebody to go, hey there. Sometimes it's Barack Obama, sometimes it's Jonathan, sometimes I do it on my own.
Wow. Yeah, and I have I have a whole arts-based intervention to help people develop this inner, I call it inner guidance.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's Barack Obama. That's funny that you say that, because it's actually, for a lot of people that I've worked with, Barack Obama is actually their inner guidance. Or like Jonathan Van Ness is another one. Lizzo's another one.
Yes.
I get Adele sometimes.
Oh, yes.
Positive. Anyway.
Figures.
Anyway,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be like actual people. It could be totally made up people.
Oh, yeah.
But
or even animals.
Yes, totally. But having like an image helps you ground in that more positive message, positive things that you're able to say to yourself so that you can boss back to the fear, versus just sort of this abstract idea of like, oh, I'm supposed to like talk back to these negative thoughts.
But I feel totally alone with them, and that's been my problem my whole life.
Right.
And you know, and so grounding.
Yeah, so having that image is super important to have people be able to develop that inner voice that's more positive. Anyway.
And then there's neuroscience to back it up, but that's for another day.
Yeah. How did
that's
we get
super
on
interesting.
This? Did we go down the tangent hole?
A little, but I've been thinking this kind of born out of the, like, how do we also handle with perfectionism?
Oh, yeah.
And so those are, like, personal things I do and things that I share with people. I had no idea how to do that till someone introduced me to it. So, you know.
There's also the Buddhist concept of being a beginner.
Yes.
Beginner's you know more mind. About Buddhism. Do you know more about that?
Oh,
beginner's mind. Yes, that's what it's called.
I think it's just honestly kind of pausing and it's a practice of giving yourself permission to have a beginner's mind and taking that pressure off. Because if you're supposed to be beginning and not knowing, then it really does feel truthful that, okay, so everything else is kind of like someone just came in all upset. And it's like, we're all fine in here. What's going on? It's like they got in traffic and it's like, well, that's out there. We're in here. It doesn't make sense for that to carry over. So beginner's mind, being curious, that's another phrase that is often used to try to elicit that sense. Because when we were kids, we were full of beginner's mind and
curiosity,
not knowing and being okay with it.
Totally.
And we internalized what was around us to build confidence. Oh, well, I trust you and you seem to know what you're doing. We still do it for good or for bad. So it's really kind of awareness, permission, and put it on repeat. I like to say, once you know how to do it, now do it again on purpose. You know, it's because we stumble upon these things organically and don't know the power of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, beginner's mind, and there's sitting in that not knowing and inviting in whatever it is that is scary. Tara Brach calls it inviting Mara in for tea, which is kind of like this dragon image.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I like that. Bringing your fear to tea and scones.
Yeah.
Sit it down, give it some nice tea, feed it some snacks.
Right.
Hear it out.
They just grumpy day in traffic. And it's like, I get you. You want to write some songs? You want to color? Yeah, okay.
Obama.
I'm thinking about both. Like, this is why engaging in the creative process is so healing, and why what we talked about last week, the process is really more important than the product, because you learn all these life lessons engaging in the creative process. So like if in your normal life, you're struggling with perfectionism, try out the creative process, because you will have to face that perfectionism and work on it. And you might learn through discovery of trying different things that like more things are possible. And then that will translate to your regular life. Oh, more things are possible. I can do this. It's not so scary. I can make an animated film during the pandemic, and it can be celebrated on Short of the Week. Yeah. Right. Anyway, that's great. That's where my brain is.
I got a lot. I feel you. What I was going to ask about, like, rejection also, because perfectionism comes out of probably having been taught that rejection is painful and very shameful to have, and then we want to avoid it, so I better get that shit right, you know? Yeah. How do you handle, you know, rejection, setbacks? Because it's such a part of being an artist, you know?
Yeah, that's a big topic. I think I'm still figuring it out. One thing I've been thinking about a lot recently with myself is that got a lot harder when I made filmmaking my career instead of just a hobby. I think it complicates it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, yeah, I think a lot of people in the arts find this, right? But when you go from doing art out of the love of it, and it's just this wonderful outlet and this thing that you love doing, when that becomes professionalized, it really does get a lot more complicated. So right now I'm trying to give myself some spaces to, like, be creative and be an artist that don't have that pressure of,
yeah,
this has to be the next career step. Like, you know, I'm trying to carve out some space to sort of get back to the fun of it.
Yeah.
But I'm still working on that. Yeah.
I'm so glad that you said that too, because that's what I experienced when I was getting my MFA in theater. My goal I was working professionally for a while, but I was like, I want to be a professor. I want to work in, you know, college age.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, you got to get, you know, your bachelor's, MFA. So I was like, okay, I was at Second City doing stuff, and I was doing things in the community, and I was like, let's go to school. Boom, 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 boom. And I had pressure on myself, anxiety, you know, so forth. But I was like, well, I want to be a teacher. So I feel I was a lot freer and less self-conscious. Things were whatever. And I remember when I had the moment where I went, I think I want to not teach. I think I just want to do it professionally. And it was like a switch went where, like, oh shit, everything felt so much harder. Yeah. I was putting so much, so analyzing myself, because I think consciously and subconsciously it was, you're not good enough. Look at all this competition. Look at all the blah, 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 blah. And I think that comes down to also, like, kind of these positive tricks of the mind, where how do you, you know, make that happen? And one could say it's not necessarily a trick because you're doing it, but it kind of is, where, like what you said, okay, how do I do things that are in this vein? But it also reminds me that there's a whole world to this that I love and enjoy, and I don't have to produce something that's going to be judged.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think kind of putting those things in, which if you don't have, like your career is in this, well, let's say it's just somebody that's like, you know, I'm not an artist, but, like, I think that's where kind of hobbies come in. We undervalue what hobbies mean.
Yeah.
Because
maybe hobbies are, like, the most important thing in life, you know? Like,
I would agree. Yeah. I actually agree that hobbies are, hobbies are super important, because, I don't know, like, the last 10 years has been not focused on building my career and everything, right? And then during the pandemic was when I had time for more hobbies and started the acting, which I, you know, had always secretly wanted to do, but was so scared to do it. And, you know, convenient that I didn't have time to do it. Anyway,
right.
You know, I probably had time to do it before, just made excuses. Anyway, but doing that, like, radically improved my life by having a hobby.
It's fantastic.
That I was, like, so excited about, and all these cool things have, you know, come from it. So yes, hobbies.
Yeah. I think a lot of times with clients, I'll say, you know, when they're kind of, they're feeling depressed or anxious, and they're, you know, so focused on all these different things. And, like, we talk about, you know, self-care, and it turns into a commercial, and it can sound really, like, uninviting, like, okay, bubble baths and, you know, yoga. And
I mean, there's nothing wrong with bubble baths.
Not at all. And those are great, but a lot of times your mind will go, I don't know. And I'm like, find something that just reminds you who you are. And if it is meeting up with friends, if it is going to a space that makes you feel good, like, a lot of clients and people I know, myself included. It's like, your friends are busy, or you're working from home. How do I interact with others? Go to a space, you're soaking in that energy, and do something or talk to a friend on the phone, something that reminds you who you are. And I think, again, that hobbies are kind of this built-in design of, now I have something to do, that you're getting all those rewards, dopamine, all that good stuff. And again, it grounds you, kind of like we were talking about that, you know, our internal Barack Obama, grounds you in something. So we don't get carried away like a kite.
Yeah, it's also nice for work-life balance. Mm-hmm. Because then your job isn't your whole identity.
Yeah.
You have hobbies.
I struggle with that.
Me too.
Because I wish I did make t-shirts, but then I probably would look at everyone's shirt and going, what's that look like? What did you get that? How's that fit? Because psychology is cool, but it's hard to turn it off because you're a human.
Yeah.
Do you have that problem when you are watching movies?
That's a great question. Like, oh, I see that. Oh.
Do you enjoy it, or are you like, unfortunately, get sucked into the? I don't know. It's a weird balance, because that can be really fun to look at the logistics and technical things, but you really have to. I think practicing some mindfulness to get used to being able to switch in and out of that. Otherwise, easy target for perfectionism.
Well, I might have to think about that. But yeah, I'm always sort of analyzing it on some kind of technical level. And that's fine. I think I'm used to that now. But sometimes if a movie is really good and like really sucks you in the right way, I'll forget and I'll just be in the story.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen very often for me, but I love it when it does. And that's sort of like, I think that clarifies what the point of it is as an art form, right? Mm-hmm. So I love when maybe a movie's so good, or it just, you know, lands in a way that I relate to or something, or I do forget to analyze it.
That's the best time. Do you have anything off the top of your head that has sucked you in? Are these fabulous films that we should be watching?
Well, there's a film, this kind of a heavy film called Mysterious Skin that did that. It's pretty heavy. It has to do with like childhood sexual assault, but watch with caution. But it's a beautiful film and like totally had that effect.
I remember that title. I'm gonna look. Was this the one from 2004?
Yeah.
Okay.
I probably should think of a lighter example, but that's okay. That's when it comes to mind because it really.
Yes. You know, I haven't seen it, but I remember it coming out and the cover art. I'm good at remembering cover art. Because it's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. Oh, and Michelle Trachtenberg. I used to love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. wrote articles about it in for some psychology stuff in college. That's what's nice about college. Take that pop culture, put it into your person.
Write an essay about it.
And yeah, is there another one? It's okay if you can't think of something that sucked you in, that surprised you and was maybe more lighthearted.
Sure.
And which just because the magnitude of opportunity, we can hit both.
Yeah. I can't think of a good example. I know there have been many.
I can't think of anything right now either.
But
I feel like there's something recent.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Was it Mysterious Skin?
Yeah.
And talking about important issues that maybe, you know, don't get talked about a lot. Can you talk about a project where you intentionally used your platform to shed light on important issues and their impact?
Yeah. Well, I think I've been trying to do this with a lot of projects I've done. Back in high school, when I was making, you know, student films, a lot of them were very, like, I don't know, kind of like a very important story, you know, message of the week things. And we were very earnest, but a lot of it at that time was like LGBT issues and it's funny to look back at those films now and they were just like so earnest, but a little, you know, a little preachy, I guess. And so, Yeah, it's something that I've tried to apply to every project in a way, thinking about just the responsibility of making art. And I think especially like in film, a lot of times the messages that are baked into it are kind of hidden. Mm-hmm. So at least asking that question of like, do we have to only cast white people? Could we not do that?
Like, yeah.
Could we? Yeah, if there, yeah. Kind of a vague answer, but yeah, I mean, I made a film in college that I was very proud of that was sort of a mockumentary about a musician who has the reputation of like a quote unquote crazy artist, and she actually, you know, has just been dealing with her own depression and mental health issues. Mm-hmm. She sort of comes back out of inpatient care, and all the fans immediately put the pressure back on her to play the role of a crazy artistic genius again.
Oh.
And she's like not sure how to navigate that.
Yeah, and she's gotten some treatment, is probably in a healthier spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then how do you continue?
Oh, I love these
like
ideas.
It's like a big identity question, you know, and like
yeah.
And people pleasing comes up and
yeah.
like all kinds of juicy
things is also
come with that.
Yeah, what comes to my mind too is the duality of here I am basically as me more authentically in the present, and it's kind of like this weird time travel where everybody's talking to you, kind of like you have amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait, what? You know, and so I that's where my mind went with just that concept, is you can really hit in a even in a slight way or a direct way, so that the audience is a little confused as to what they're feeling and what's happening. It kind of moves them, shifts you internally of, oh, it's kind of like she has a head injury. Oh, wow, that's, you know, not literal, but it's, you know, like how we have empathy towards somebody that, you know, oh, well, that was somebody, wow, that's really hard for that person. They really love them. And they're like, I can't be around you anymore because I'm sober or whatever it may be. And I'm not crazy and wild anymore. Maybe that person was really great. And, you know, it's like, here's a theme that, or a topic that people just take for granted, that oh, a person got, you know, they got their life together, and yeah, people in your life are gonna have to get rid of or so forth, but having to then come back where you paused,
yeah,
and navigate.
So yeah. what did your book character do?
I love your mind.
Quite a dilemma.
This whale, I'm like, oh wow. And you're like so chill about it, like yeah, so just kind of have
so
these
humble,
things
right?
I make up. Yeah.
So
oh,
humble.
My goodness. That film, I've always wanted to maybe rework that idea into something, you know, larger in scope, but it was very much like a satire. So it was mockumentary, but it sort of got taken to a ridiculous extreme where the main character's manager was sort of like faking that she'd, you know, died and she's going to live on post-mortem and she shows up to her memorial concert. You know, surprise, I'm alive. I'm fine, guys. Like, please stop glamorizing or sort of like romanticizing my mental illness, basically. So, yeah, in the end of that film, she sort of retired from public life.
I love it.
Yes.
I love satires, too,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's such a great reflection, easy, much more digestible way of kind of looking at society or ourselves.
Yeah, it's nice to have comedy that has, like, such a sharp point to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough to do good satire. I'm still trying to figure that out, but
yeah,
when it works, it's really... really, really effective.
Yeah.
I feel that I have to Google satire. What exactly is a satire? It's something funny, but has a sharp point to it.
Yeah.
Like has an impact that's trying to be made.
Yeah. I think it would be like comedy that's sort of making fun of something with that you know, is trying to point out a real problem in it. So it's sort of like comedy to fight the power, basically. Like comedy to challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
Through mockery or through
exaggeration
through absurd, yeah.
Yeah, so it becomes this absurdist thing where you don't necessarily take offense, but because of that, it keeps you curious to see it in a different perspective and light. Barbie is very much a satire. There's other elements in it too, but that exaggeration. What's a good, another good, Best in Show can be considered a satire because it's not giving like a huge message, but it's exaggerating how people are with their dogs, even though there's some truth to it. And so it doesn't necessarily mean to offend, but it also wants to prove a point. But it can offend. It can go really far. The definition would be use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's, well, this gets harsher, stupidity or vices, particularly the context of contemporary. It's kind of held up to kind of expose it, direct it like fashionable something. Getting some examples.
Well, I have a question, Ben.
Yeah.
Is Mosquito Mother kind of like a satire? Because there's humor, but then there's like a deeper
message. Yeah, it would be a satire.
No, that sounds better.
Yeah, because okay. I don't think it's sort of like taking the air out of a force of, like, out of a force of power.
I see.
I don't think it's critiquing something in that way. It's,
oh, I see. Got it.
Maybe a different type of comedy. I don't know. Comedy is so hard to talk about.
Yeah, it is, because it's,
I guess,
very
you have to look up the definition of it.
Most recently, like, Don't Look Up is considered a satire.
Oh, sure.
Where, like,
The Big Short, I think, in the
Big
same vein.
Big Short, yeah, has, because it's over the top. Truman Show is satire.
Oh, okay.
Because there's some truth in it, because the hot reality and everybody's watching, but it's exaggerated to prove a point. It makes it, and just like comedy, it's what satire is, a form of it. It's kind of a, I think of it like a sleight of hand.
Yeah.
You know, where you go, oh, I wasn't expecting, but, oh, I kind of learned a lot. What, that elephant, that's not fair, you know? And so that's why humor, a lot of times people, and why people get also, not always, but people that are in comedic communities get concerned with comedians, because the purpose is to use some satire and exaggeration, mm-hmm. but it can go into the realm of mean spirit or blue, mm-hmm. to where now you join in kind of a bullying place, mm-hmm. and a lot of times people aren't sure where that line is, because it's like describing the air.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to pin down.
You can point at and describe it, but it again is kind of like, wait, what? It's like those hologram or mosaics, you know, like where it's like small images create a big one.
Mm.
It's not literally like that, but if you go, oh, it's like that, I'm like, what does that mean? I don't understand. What's his life?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You know? But that's hard too, that responsibility of communicating something in your work. Does that stress you out?
I was just wondering that, like, where you have an intention with a message in something you create, and, you know, it's probably going to piss some people off, but other people are going to get it. Like, how do you sit with that? How do you work with that?
That's a good question. I'm trying to just embrace sincerity, you know, and I think if you approach something sincerely and with thoughtfulness, it's okay if some people don't like it. You know, I feel like at least I can stand behind that.
It's also kind of from my therapist brain of what is that kind of, and I'm not defining for you what you just described, but like how I interpret it is, well, how do I want to exist in the world?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's easier for us in ways, sometimes it's harder, sometimes it's easier for some people, sometimes it's harder for other people, depending on what we've been introduced to. But defining kind of your values.
Yeah.
And knowing, like you said, my intention, and working on, and it's not going, well, I didn't mean to offend you, so screw you. That's not what we have to, I think intention and impact are both important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, finding a balance so that our impact doesn't destroy us like a wave, because mm-hmm. a lot of things can be taken in ways that we're like, whoa, not even on our radar. And it's like, oh, if someone's offended by, yeah, let's say, oh, crazy, so I'm trans, let's go there. You know, we're doing something that's promoting, you know, trans equality, or there's a trans character, people get really huffy and puffy. Mm. And I can go, I get that you're offended or whatever it is because of your, what you don't know, and kind of defending that. But I'm not going to take that on.
Yeah.
and internalize it and use it as something against myself, because my intention is founded in my values, my integrity, and what I know to be true, which was to shed a light on a community that is positive and good. And that's what that is.
Yeah, and you can stand by that and feel... Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Now, if I made something about, like, destroy you all, like, okay, well, there's consequences there, bro.
Yeah.
And that's, like, something also, your intentions weren't consequences. Well, we're going to have to sit down and talk about that more. Not you. I'm an imaginary person, you know. Because where are your values?
Yeah.
Defensiveness isn't a value.
Shifting focus from being, you know, super worried about how it's perceived to what is the values this represents. I think that's kind of a more solid framing, you know. And of course, you need to take the response into consideration, mm-hmm. but you can't really make things for a response.
Yeah.
Because that won't be sincere, even if, you know, at best it'll be very boring.
Mm. Right.
And not, yeah, not very sincere. And at worst,
very
it'll be
juicy in terms of, like, relate that sentiment to, like, mental health and how we show up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when we force it or, like, want people to perceive us in a certain way, we're not showing up with sincerity. Mm. And we can actually be very boring and hollow because we're just, like, a misrepresentation of who we actually are. Mm-hmm. So when we learn to show up more authentically with sincerity, know our values, know our worth, we can't be taken down by other people's opinions easily, you know?
And
we don't lose our sense of self.
You don't lose
with other people and out in the world.
Mm-hmm. And you also find your connections, because a lot of times, this is something I've experienced personally, being more inauthentic out of fear and not realizing. And once that shift, you know how people are like, when I stopped looking and trying, or when I, got to therapy and I feel terrible about myself. You'll feel worse before you get better, because you're actually
confronting it all.
You're confronting all the shit. You know?
Yeah.
And
sitting
so it's
in it.
Not comfy.
Yeah.
But out of that, people always go, oh my God, then I got a good job, or I'm in this healthy relationship. And we kind of go, why did that happen? What happened? There's a lot of things at play, but when you change, everything around you changes. And if you're more authentically yourself, and like you listed, and how we do that is working through what's getting in the way of defining how you want to exist, show up, and feeling confident, comfortable in that, my values and what feels right. I want to be kind to people, or, you know, whatever that is. Those people who are similar on that wavelength are going to go, oh, I'm going to hang out with you. Because a lot of times it's like, well, I'm nice, I'm doing all this stuff, and why is it that people aren't connecting to me? And it's like, you're right, you kind of are the problem, but you're not a problem.
Mm.
You're going about it in the wrong way. It's empty carbs. You know, it feels good in the moment, but it's not going to sustain you.
Yeah.
So just finding out, like, all those things, and then people connect, and then now you've got community reflecting back to you the truth, as opposed to, oh, I really love that movie, you know, where the guy did the blah blah blah, and it's like, I hated doing that, I missed it, thank you. You know, but it's you know, sometimes we can't pick and choose people to be sincere. So it's still a skill we need to get through at times. Like, maybe
sometimes there's circumstances where you just have to
go, I'll direct this thingy here. Yeah. Okay, I've got rent. All right. Yeah. But
I have a question that made me think of a question. When you are deciding on projects that you want to take on, because you're very creative, you have this incredible creative mind, so I imagine there's like a bajillion things that you might want to be working on, but you only have so much time and so much energy to put into things. So how do you decide what you're going to actually make and put time into?
Well, I think for me, there's projects that are like kind of paid gigs, and most of the music videos are like that. Those are a little easier because there's always a set deadline that's usually, you know, the client's deadline. And they pay my rent, then I need to do them. And yeah, I feel like that's a less complicated question. But the personal projects that are more like, you know, I could spend as long as I want making the animated film took like almost 2 years. So for those, I try to make sure that it's an idea that's I love enough that I know it can sustain a long process. And the process always ends up being at least twice as arduous as you expect it to be. Somehow that rule applies, even if you, you know it. You're like, okay, I know it's going to be twice as long than I think, so now I know how long it'll take. Nope, it's going to be twice as long as that. So I think, yeah, I try to keep that in mind. Just have an idea where it's you're so compelled to do it that you know that you'd still be in love with it a couple months down the line. Mm-hmm. Or adjust the scope to be smaller. Like, can this be a 1-minute film instead of a 10-minute film? Mm-hmm. That's a good solution too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's my test that I ask myself. And also I like to get other people involved at some point. Like, is it creative collaborators, actors, you know, other filmmakers? Because I love working with people, but also because once other people are involved, you have to finish it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would never not finish a project that I've like brought people to help me with. Yeah. So,
which was one of our questions around how collaboration plays into your creative process as a director and, you know, visual effects supervisor.
Yeah.
It sounds like it forces you to actually finish projects.
that's one benefit. Yeah. That's my way of like adding some external accountability. But I guess overall, like, I think what I love about film as a medium is that it is so collaborative. It's kind of like a combination of all these other arts rolled into one, you know, so there's music, there's photography, acting,
very
all this
interdisciplinary.
Stuff. Very interdisciplinary, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's really like a treat, and I feel very lucky whenever I'm in a position where I get to work with other people doing creative things, like in service of the same film, but it's just really inspiring, you know, to get to work with someone who's better at their thing, or bringing something that I couldn't bring. Music, I'm thinking of especially, like, I love music, but I'm not a musician, and that's always just, like, such a treat to get to kind of get in there and get creative with a musician, but really just appreciate what they're doing. So, yeah, that's why I love it. I think that's one of the coolest things about the medium of film or video or whatever, just combining all the arts into one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think I appreciated film like I do now after working with you on the short film and seeing all these different things that have to line up and have to happen in order to make a film.
Yeah.
And we only made, what, like a 5-6 minute film? And I'm like, holy shit, what does this process look like for a feature film? My God, because...
Yeah. Well, hopefully you have more people.
Okay, so maybe maybe it goes back.
We were
back
doing a lot with a little, but yeah, it was...
Yeah, but still, like, you know... You helped adapt the writing to turn it into a screenplay, right? That's the right word. Is that the right word? Okay. And then you were the producer on it. And then you'd made all those like sheets of all the things. I don't know what they're called.
Sheets?
Like the schedule and then the shot list.
All sheets, schedule,
and then you knew your friend and got your friend involved and you knew where to get the equipment. And I'm just like, holy shit. And I imagine on a feature film, like these would all be designated jobs for different people. So it wouldn't all be on you. But I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And everybody has to show up and like do their job to make it happen on time and on budget.
Yeah. It's
holy
kind of
shit.
The same thrill of like being in working in theater on tech week or like opening night.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess a lot of us kind of like that. You know, logistical thrill, I guess. Ooh, logistics. I really hope everything's going to come together. And
yeah,
you know, you, yeah.
And mm-hmm. you were so calm. I mean, yes, we had time when we were making ours. We weren't necessarily on a time crunch. We had the whole day.
Yeah.
But like, you were so calm, cool, and collected. Or maybe you weren't on the inside.
Oh, okay.
On the outside, though, I was like, dang. Ben is so calm, cool, and collected, and just like, oh yeah, so we'll just rearrange this, and we'll just do that, and like, so, take 15, and we'll come get you when we're ready. And you're just like, I'm like, holy shit, I would be so stressed out if I was Ben right now. And so I'm curious, were you stressed out when we were making our film, or were you calm, cool, and collected?
I was stressed out.
Okay.
Hopefully that doesn't break the illusion.
No.
But, you know, I had a great time.
I had a great time too. I value how much work you put into it because it's a lot. And I didn't realize before we worked together how much goes into the work that you do.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being up for all that. I know it was a lot. We were like, let's do a short film, and then we really did it.
I had no idea what I was getting myself into, yeah, to be honest.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
All I know is, like, I told my husband, so our condo's gonna be a movie set for, like, 3 days. Okay.
Right, right. Yep.
Apple yeah. boxes everywhere. Equipment everywhere. Anyway, it was yeah. really fun.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Mosquito Mother?
Sure,
we
have yeah.
What time is that doing?
Okay, so Mosquito Mother came out of a monologue that I wrote for an acting class.
Yeah.
And I originally, the way I wrote it was, you know, for stage. And I performed it for my class and they all really loved it. And you weren't in that class though.
No, that was, point, I right? think, before we met? Or was that?
No, I think it was after. Okay. But anyway, yeah. you had reached out to me at some point and asked if I had written anything lately. Yeah. Right? Am I getting the story right?
Somehow, am I remembering it right? And you'd said you were writing some stuff and you sent it over, and it's a really interesting piece of writing. As a 5-minute play. Do you want to talk about like what's
about? Give it away?
Yeah.
I still have trouble talking about what exactly it's about without giving away the whole thing. But basically, okay, it's written about my own life. So it's not like a character, it's me as the main character, I guess. And it is a legit true story about how I interact with certain things in my apartment, in my condo, and like in my own mind. It has to do with sort of a like existential questioning of certain topics. And it's kind of silly and funny. And then ba-bam. Get you in the feels.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. So it's about something very personal to you that's based on its true story, but it's handled in like a very kind of over-the-top, silly, whimsical, humorous way. And then the realness of it kind of sneaks up behind you and you go, whoa, suddenly I didn't realize that this was actually about something really, really personal.
Yeah.
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 And that was what was cool about the writing. And then I think we kind of like heightened a lot of those silly elements. Mm-hmm. Filming it, that was a lot of fun. It does involve a mosquito. I made like a puppet mosquito.
Yeah. Okay. You know? And this still blows my mind with like how your creative mind works. And maybe it's part of your training. And so like, you know, you're trained to think outside the box like this. But Ben legit made a puppet that then was used on a green screen. Mm-hmm. And then shrunk down and put into our very short film. And I think originally it was just going to be like hand-drawn little thing, and then you were like, I'm gonna make a puppet.
Yeah.
Like a big puppet.
The puppet's like was like 2 feet big. I finally threw that thing out. It was pretty gross looking, like a hairy oily mosquito, you know. Like the worst Muppet you'd ever meet, you know. So it was pretty gnarly.
Yeah,
it did. That's its job, super, you know?
Cool. And you're like, I'm gonna make it. And then I saw you the next week, and you had made it. I'm like, holy shit! How did you just like in a week you made this thing? And you're like, yeah, I experimented with these things and figured it out. I'm like, wow. On top of all the other cool things you do, Ben is an excellent puppet maker as well.
Yeah.
And so that film got accepted to the Catalina Film Festival. Yeah. So we're going to be heading to Catalina at the end of September. Yeah, it's in a category that's something like I didn't see it coming. What's the category?
Oh, I forgot. That took a turn. That's it.
Yeah, and so, I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
It really does take
that's
a turn.
Cool.
So that's going to probably play with some other short films that have a surprising and weird twist.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I know that you're like, you've done film festivals, but too. I'm like, this is so exciting. What am I going to wear?
Yeah. Well,
anything else that we want to talk about? I think it's about time for us to be wrapping up. Ben, where can we find you? Where can we see more of your films?
Oh, sure. If you want to check out my work, it's benkadie.com. That's my last name. Katie, K-A-D-I-E. K-A-D-I-E again. So benkadie.com or same thing on Instagram. I'm pretty Googleable with that name, which is my name.
Yes, and so go check out all of his cool things. You also have an awesome dance film that you made like around the same time as the animation and our film, which is phenomenal. Still to this day, I like watch it and like, how does that work? So amazing visual effects.
Thank you,
yeah.
It's trippy, it's short. That's the one's a fun watch
it's
too.
It's wonderful. Yeah. That one also, I watched it and walked away feeling emotional from, and I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know that from a dance film, like I could feel all these feelings. So go check it out. It's phenomenal. What's the name of that one?
That one is called Ahead Behind. And ahead, comma, behind.
Ahead, comma,
behind. It's about people being ahead of each other or being behind each other. Very literally. Like it's about some people standing in the line and then doing a trippy dance.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming and chatting with us today.
Yeah, so good. Thank you so much.
So good to have you.
Yeah.
And
that's it.
That's it.
All right, folks.
Watch your films.
Bye.